You're listening to another top-rated radio show on the USA Talk Radio Network.
Welcome to the American Hour with your host, Commander Tom Garcia, on the USA Talk Radio Network.
Happy Friday, everybody. This is Mike Cutler. No, I'm not Tom Garcia, but I am filling in for Tom. In fact, I spoke with him earlier today. He's back from another one of his many trips to Latin America. You know, Tom is an American Airlines pilot. Previously, he was a naval aviator, American hero. But I'm not Tom, but I'm a great admirer of his. And again, my name is Mike Cutler. I'm a retired senior special agent with what used to be the Immigration and Naturalization Service. And within the next few weeks, in fact, we're going to be transitioning over, and I'm going to be creating my own program on the USA Radio, the US Talk Radio Network. But today, here I am filling in for Tom, and I've got Paula Lassan joining me. Paula, how are you? Happy Friday to you.
Happy Friday to you, Michael. Doing well, and we've got some really bad flood watch weather here up in the Boston area.
Wow. I think somebody has failed to pay the weather bill. You know, here in New York, we were flooded this week, and now they're telling us we may get inundated again. I'm not sure where we're getting inundated worse from the skies or from Washington. I have to tell you, this country has its challenges, not the least of which being the people who profess to be our leaders. And if my voice sounds a little bit less clear than usual, I'm on my cell phone, folks, and I'm driving home after having spoken before some Tea Party folks out in Lewistown, Pennsylvania. You know, I'm part of the Tea Party Immigration Coalition. I'm a registered Democrat. But my goal is to get all Americans, irrespective of political party or affiliation, to come together on what I believe is the most critical challenge that confronts America today and really impacts every challenge, every threat that our nation is now dealing with. And that crisis to which I speak, or of which I speak, is our continuing failures to not only secure our nation's borders, but to make certain that the immigration system has real integrity. And to be clear, this is not about being anti-immigrant. I am the son of an immigrant. My mom came to America ahead of the Holocaust. I was named for my grandmother who perished in the Holocaust. Many of my family members died in the Holocaust. My dad was born in New York, but his parents came from Russia. We certainly are a nation of immigrants, but the critical thing to remember is that the difference between an immigrant and an illegal alien is comparable to the difference between a house guest and a burglar. And I don't want you to think that this is a statement of meanness or nastiness. But you really need to understand that the immigration laws of our nation were enacted for one fundamental purpose, to make certain that we did not allow people into our country who would do harm to us one way or the other. And, of course, today, being confronted by the threat of terrorism, today with the expansion of the Mexican cartels across our country from border to border and coast to coast, and with other transnational gangs and criminal organizations setting up shop in America, these are serious challenges, life-threatening challenges, and we must remember we are coming up, it's hard to believe, on the 10th anniversary of the horrific attacks of September 11th, 2001. And we also need to remember that right now, there are so many Americans and lawful immigrants who are out of work. They are losing their homes. I was watching ABC News last night after I got back to my hotel room after I did my presentation to the Tea Party group, and they were showing people standing in long lines trying to get jobs, and they were suffering from the effects of heat. I believe this was down in Texas, where the police were trying to get cold water to these people who were out there on those lines in business attire for hour after hour, hoping that they would get one of the few jobs that might be available. So we hear the politicians say, well, you know, we're going to create the jobs. Well, here's something that the Obama administration won't tell you. Without creating a single job, we could put many millions of Americans to work Monday morning. This coming Monday morning, we could put millions of Americans to work if we got rid of the illegal aliens who are doing jobs. And this mythology that illegal aliens do the work Americans won't do is an insult. Any politician who could dare stand in front of microphones and say, you know what, the illegals are doing the work Americans won't do because somehow I guess they think or Obama thinks that we are lazy, we are incompetent, we are stupid. I mean, maybe on election day we demonstrate those qualities, too many of us do, because quite frankly, folks, with very few exceptions, I don't know of too many people in Washington who should keep their jobs. I've had it up to here with the nonsense. If we have Americans out of work, how can a politician who alleges that he represents the citizens of this country make the statement, well, illegal aliens are doing the work Americans won't do, while we have Americans standing in sweltering heat, hoping against hope that they will be fortunate enough to get a job? These are people who are ready to go to work, Mr. Obama, if you would free up the jobs that people who have no right to be here are now taking. You know, the thing that makes illegal aliens appealing to employers is that illegal aliens will work for substandard wages under substandard conditions, very often conditions that are so substandard as to be patently illegal, hazardous. This is about exploitation. There is no kindness being shown to illegal aliens by exploiting them. That's nuts. And you know, the illegal aliens who work here and foreign nationals who work here in the higher end industries with these so-called temporary work visas, the H-1B visas and so forth, do something that's very sensible to them. Certainly if I was working in a foreign country, it's something I would do, and that is to send money back home to their families. And I don't blame them. You know, if someone gave me the opportunity to go to Canada and make $200,000 a year or $300,000 a year, I would do it, and then I would send my money home. Well, that's what the foreign workers do in our country, whether they're here legally or illegally, because their goal, rightfully so, from their perspective, is to support their families. And we hear these stories about these poor folks, these other countries. And I'm going to tell you what. Many of these folks are having difficulties in their home countries, and I feel awful for them. But what the news media never talks about or rarely talks about, ladies and gentlemen, is how our fellow American citizens are not being able to support themselves, not able to pay their bills, not able to feed their families. It's estimated that between 1 in 4 and 1 in 5 American families now lives below the poverty line. I mean, that's astonishing. With that level of poverty in America, with the level of unemployment in America, why in God's name would we possibly not want to get people who should not be here out of those jobs desperately needed by American citizens? You know, I think it's very important to give to charity. But if you lose your job, if you are unable to feed your own children, you'd have to have a skewed view of the universe to give money to charity while your own children were going to bed hungry at night. Americans are going to bed hungry at night. Americans are losing their homes. They're losing their tenuous grip on what used to be called the middle class, the American dream. And meanwhile, the administration today announced that they are going to do a case-by-case evaluation to determine which aliens have committed serious crimes and they're really a problem versus what aliens simply ran our borders, ignored our immigration laws, and violated our laws. And so if that's the case, We're not going to bother them. They can stay here forever. And God knows, you know, maybe if we're stupid enough and we vote Mr. Obama in for another term, he'll give them their amnesty, a pathway to citizenship. Now, I want to make a clear point. When people run the border, we call them illegal aliens. And everybody says, oh, they're illegal. Well, let's give a little bit of thought to the law that we're speaking about, folks. Let's give a little thought about that. Because if you're doing something that's illegal, it means it's contrary to law. The law that aliens who run the border violate are laws that are supposed to screen out those people who are involved in activities that are dangerous and harmful. For example, we're supposed to keep aliens out of our country who suffer from dangerous communicable diseases, aliens who suffer mental illness and are prone to violence, or the sex offenders, the pedophiles, and that sort of thing, convicted felons, fugitives from justice, people previously deported from the United States and reentered illegally, narcotics traffickers, human smugglers, human rights violators, war criminals, spies, terrorists, money launderers, members of violent gangs. These are all people we're supposed to keep out of the United States. So when someone runs the border, two things happen. Number one, there's no record that they entered our country, which is a very bad thing. Number two, we have no way of knowing if these folks fall into one or more categories of excludable aliens, but we have to presume that they do, because if they did not, then they would present themselves for inspection so they could be lawfully admitted into our country. So by allowing people and encouraging people to run the borders, to come here illegally and set up shop, embed themselves, to use the language of the 9/11 Commission, to which, by the way, I provided testimony years ago, then what we are doing is creating a national security nightmare for our country and for our citizens. And so then we get to this question, and I want you to think about this very seriously, and I've raised this question before. It's a question that I asked my audience yesterday in Pennsylvania. If we don't have secure borders, if we have tens of millions of illegal aliens currently living and working in America today in virtually every major city and some not so major cities, if we have all these folks here and we have no idea who they are, who they're involved with, what they're involved with, my question is, why do we still have a military? And I'm very serious. And this is not a slight against our military. I am in awe of the gallantry, of the sacrifices, of the commitment, of the discipline of America's armed service people. Our men and women in uniform, goodness, we can never repay the debt we owe them. But my question is, why do we still have a military? Why do we spend all that money on nuclear submarines and aircraft carriers and stealth bombers and infantry divisions? Well, we can go down the whole list of where the money goes, and we're talking about gazillions of dollars, if at the end of the day, people who want to destroy us are likely crossing our borders without detection, without impediments, and they are setting up shop across our nation. What good did our military do us on September 11th, 2001? And if, God forbid, there was another terrorist attack, what good would all of that military hardware and all that military personnel do us to protect us again? So if you're not willing to secure your nation's borders against those people whose true identities are unknown and unknowable, then why don't we simply change the color of the American flag from red, white, and blue to a basic white flag and say, we surrender, we don't need borders, because we no longer have a country. And I'm not trying to be radical about this, and I'm not some super conservative guy. On most issues, you'd accuse Mike Cutler of being liberal. But from a standpoint of what makes sense, how do you defend your nation against people who want to kill you when your borders are as porous as a sieve, where the borders act as little more than a speed bump to criminals and terrorists from the four corners of the planet? And once these folks come here, we now have the president saying, you know what, if you're here and you're not getting arrested for crimes, we're just cool with that. We're going to let you work. We're going to let you stay here. We don't care if it causes Americans to lose their jobs, because I'm pandering to the people who are making the campaign contributions and to the people who are promising me blocks of votes. So you know what? The heck with the immigration laws. You know, I don't know of any other set of laws that our politicians would be willing to ignore, but the immigration laws, they seem to be of no consequence. But when you stop and think about it, of all the federal laws that are on the books, the most critical set of those federal laws deal with the borders of our nation, because that's where the line stops. That's where you defend your nation, to keep the people out who want to do you harm. I know I've been going on for quite a bit, Paula, but doesn't what I'm saying make sense to you?
Well, of course it does. I mean, it came out today on one of these news articles that I was reading. It's called, it's a news consortium. And, you know, just so the listeners can understand, you know, according to the administration's announcement, the new federal group would review the cases of some 300,000 people who are faced with deportation. Those that have had convictions for violent felonies would be reviewed first and deported as quickly as possible. At the bottom of the list would be students, veterans, and people who were brought to the country illegally as children. Janet Napolitano, who is the Homeland Security Secretary, wrote in a letter to Congress that this case-by-case approach will enhance public safety. Immigration judges will be able to more swiftly adjudicate high-priority cases such as those involving convicted felons. Napolitano and others claim the change is necessary because of the substantial backlog of cases. That backlog presently means that some cases could remain undecided for a very long time, leaving violent criminals in the country and others such as students with a long-term period of uncertainty, which would affect their ability to attend school. Now, while many immigrant activist groups have praised the move, others have slammed it as a backdoor form of amnesty. It's referred to as a backdoor amnesty because it is the result of executive mandate rather than congressional review and approval. Many people object to the change because it softens the government's stance on illegal immigration. However, analysis are quick to point out that being in the United States illegally isn't a crime, but rather a civil code violation. The policy doesn't affect the estimated 10 million or more people who are living in the country illegally, only those 300,000 currently in deportation proceedings. I feel that's a high number. I don't know how you feel how that is as a metric. The administration is still pursuing comprehensive immigration reform, including passage of the DREAM Act, which would allow young people brought into the country illegally to become citizens as a result of schooling or military service.
Well, you know, here's the deal. They tried to ram DREAM Act down our throats.
Mm-hmm.
They tried on several occasions to jam comprehensive immigration reform down the throats of the citizens of this nation. And each time, Congress refused to approve it. You know, when I was a kid, Paula, I don't know if you remember this little booklet they used to give out, but we had the John Hancock Insurance Company, and of course they gave out copies of the Constitution with a picture or an image of the signed Declaration of Independence with John Hancock's big flourishing signature. And one of the things they handed out, this is a long time ago, more years ago than I want to admit to, they gave out a booklet called How a Bill Becomes a Law. And the bill is supposed to get through the legislative process, and then the president gets to sign it. Now, the problem is that they tried to get this through the legislative process, and it didn't work. So what happened was they went back and tried again. And they went back and tried with the DREAM Act. And then they used the argument that the DREAM Act is supposed to help children. And, you know, one of the things that really gets me worked up is that the folks that are doing this understand full well how compassionate Americans are. I think that as a people, there's probably no citizens of any other country that are more concerned, more preoccupied with children. I mean, when you look at the child labor that goes on around the world, the exploitation of children, even in the sex trade, you know, we see it for what this is, heinous exploitation of vulnerable young children. But around the world, people see kids as, you know, disposable, exploitable. So they know how we are as a people, and so they're playing on our sensibilities and our compassion and saying, well, we're just trying to help children. And everybody melts, and they say, oh, my gosh, children, oh, we have to help children. Do you know that the DREAM Act would allow aliens who are up to 35 years of age to be given lawful status in our country? Now, stop and think about that and understand a reality. And I think a lot of our politicians don't understand what I'm about to say. And I think that a lot of Americans don't understand this, because we've come to watch these TV programs about the cops, about police, about federal agents. You know, you fingerprint somebody and magically the computer tells you everything you ever wanted to know about this person, even what size shoe he or she wears. In point of fact, there are so many illegal aliens in our country who are undocumented. That's the word that the immigration anarchists, which is the new term that I've decided to use to describe those folks who advocate for open borders and massive amnesty programs. The immigration anarchists, are trying to create this image that, oh, we'll fingerprint these people and we'll know who they are. No, that's not the case at all. What will happen is, if let's say somebody got here 3 weeks ago and claims that he's been using different names and so forth, where do you begin to conduct an investigation to determine when that person really entered the United States? You know, I was an immigration agent for 26 years. And for 4 years before that, I was an immigration inspector at Kennedy Airport. And then for one of those 4 years, I was assigned to do the interviews to determine if an alien should be granted residency based on marriage to a U.S. citizen or a resident alien. So I've had the opportunity to go on all the rides. The problem is that you have a limited number of adjudications officers, the job I did for that 1 year, over at Citizenship and Immigration Services. Without going out into the street with a photograph and knocking on doors and asking, do you know this person? How long do you know him? What name do you know him by? You have no way of knowing who that person is. Running fingerprints and what they call the security check is almost worthless. Because all that a security check means, and this is something that I want you guys to think about, maybe you want to write a little note to yourself about this so the next time you're having a debate with your neighbor or with your brother or your sister-in-law or your mom or your dad or whomever, or that guy at work next to you, here's the point. A security check takes seconds. It's very quick. You run fingerprints. If the person has never been arrested in the United States, the fingerprint record will come back clean. If the person gives you a name, you then run that name. If the name comes back clean and the prints come back clean, the presumption is made that the person is who they claim they are, and the person is presumed to be okay. So if, let's say for argument's sake, one of Osama bin Laden's right-hand men are in the United States, but says, my name is Donald Duck. And he's never been arrested because he's smart, you know. He says, no, I've got to keep a low profile until the day that I carry out some god-awful attack on America. So he comes in, he drives a taxi cab, he works in a gas station, he attends a college, or probably not even a college, because he's going to really want to stay low. Maybe he'll be a street vendor. We've seen this. This isn't conjecture, folks. This is what we've seen. So you've got a guy keeping a very low profile, no fingerprints, right? False name. Says, my name is Donald Duck. The prints come back clean. The name Donald Duck comes back clean. That guy is now considered to not be a threat to America would not be removed from the United States. Nobody would be looking for him. This is the perfect embedding tactic to terrorists. And the administration previously, there's a guy named John Morton who runs ICE, Immigration and Customs Enforcement, where the AFG, the American Federation of Government Employees, took his memo that was sent to the employees and broadcast it all over the place. And they came up with, I think it's about 19 or 20 categories of aliens who we're not supposed to mess with. Don't arrest them. Don't try to remove them. We're going to keep them here forever and always because these aren't the problem. And, I mean, it really got ridiculous. It wasn't like anybody over 70 and you say, well, okay, fine. Anybody under the age of, you know, whatever. No, we're talking about if you have a relative in the military, if you've gone to college, if you've attended school, and then they make it very clear that this isn't even an all-encompassing list. So what this does is to tell the agent that if you don't arrest anybody, you can't be at fault because there's no problem there. But if you arrest somebody that you're not supposed to arrest, God help you. You know, I want to make a couple of points real quick. There's two websites that I want you guys to take out a pen and write down, and this is important, because what I'm trying to do is to create a bucket brigade of truth. And in conjunction with that, I write commentaries frequently, and they can be found on my personal website, and that's michaelcutler.net. It's likely that if you're listening to me today, you probably saw the link to my website, but please write it down. If you did not, it's Michael Cutler, C-U-T-L-E-R, one word, michaelcutler.net. I also write for a wonderful organization called Californians for Population Stabilization. They go by the name CAPS, C-A-P-S. Their website is capsweb.org. You know, they've been getting hammered by illegal immigration for many years. California is bankrupt. And they formed an organization years ago out of concern about what they saw happening to their own state. And they've asked me to provide my perspectives because I was an INS agent for those many years. I have provided congressional testimony. I think we're up to 15 congressional hearings. I've also done work as an expert witness in federal trials where immigration was an issue. And so I work with them. Because what we're trying to do is get people to understand the issue. And if we are unable to differentiate legal immigration from illegal immigration, if we're not able or willing to make certain that we don't create opportunities for bad guys to enter our country, if we're not willing to make certain that we take care of our citizens first, that we take care of lawful immigrants who've played by the rules first, then we've got a very serious problem. Because the whole point to being a citizen of a country is to be able to be the recipient of the benefits that you would expect citizenship would bring. You know, you become a citizen in the country because you recognize that the country is providing you with opportunities. Well, in point of fact, if you have an administration who says, we don't care whether you're a citizen or not, we don't care if you have a green card or not, we're just thrilled to have you come one, come all, and if you just want to do a job, that's fabulous. So my question is this, Paula. Why would anybody ever want to even become a resident or a citizen when you realize that there are communities in this country, like New York, where it's probably better for you to be an illegal alien and law enforcement would be less likely to scrutinize you than if they realize you're a citizen? How backwards is this?
I would venture to guess that it's very backwards, but it's probably that the way the system has been worked over time. I don't think that there's any. It's not black and white. There seems to be a gray area. You know, in other words, in Atlanta. Okay, I came across another article in Atlanta. Sheriff Neil Warren, who was dubbed the Wild West Warren by pro-immigration groups, has racked up nearly 15,000 immigration-related arrests in Cobb County, which is north of Atlanta. So the new policy that was announced yesterday, by the DHS could mean that many of those arrested by Wild West Warren may not only get out of jail, but could also go back to Cobb County with a legal work visa in hand.
Yep.
So, you know, responding to the criticism that the U.S. deportation net has been cast too wide, sweeping up college kids, grandparents, and other non-criminal illegals, the administration yesterday formalized new rules that could mean release for many of the 300,000 people currently facing deportation. You know, perhaps more important to Main Street America is the question of how the new policy will affect police departments, primarily in the West and Southeast. Many of the departments have used federal programs as a means to arrest every illegal immigrant they come across. But the DHS's announcement yesterday introduces new uncertainty about whether many of those arrested will simply be sent back. And it is further proof that until comprehensive immigration reform passes Congress, states and federal agencies will continue to nibble at the issue with different and often contradictory measures. But in the meantime, the latest move makes for a law enforcement nightmare.
Let me ask you a question. Who wrote that article? Where was this published?
The article was published in the Christian Science Monitor. And
okay,
it was,
now here's what's interesting. Here's what's interesting, Paula.
Mm-hmm.
Think about some of the things that they, because I presume you were reading directly from the article.
Yeah.
And my antenna went up because I heard a couple of things.
Yeah.
They were saying that pro-immigrant groups, right, obviously were unhappy that they were arresting illegal aliens. Now, I want to understand how that's possible. Because, you see, I am pro-immigrant. Because, again, as an immigration officer, my job was to make certain that the immigration laws that are designed to enable people to lawfully enter the United States and, if appropriate, become resident aliens, if appropriate, become citizens, those are immigrants. This is the legal immigration system. I certainly am pro-legal immigration system. And even the way by which we naturalize people and do all that other stuff has no integrity either, by the way, folks. You know, it was funny, when I was speaking yesterday, one of the guys said to me, shut the border down and the problem is solved. I said, are you willing to close down every international airport in America? And the guy's jaw dropped. I said, because understand, 40% of the illegal aliens don't run the border. They come through ports of entry and then vanish.
Correct.
So, you know, I am pro-immigrant in terms of adhering to the legal system. But now, the guy that wrote this article for the Christian Science Monitor spewed a lot of stuff that's balderdash, because what he said was, well, if you're pro-immigrant, then you don't want illegal aliens arrested. Really? You know, I mean, you think, am I right or wrong? And then he said, you know, and this is all happening because they didn't pass comprehensive reform. Right. They didn't give everybody green cards, so what do you expect is going to happen? You know, you have got to read between the lines, folks. You know, they use this language. When I use the word alien, oh, my God, the you know, you expect bolts of lightning to come down and blow me up. You said immigrant. You said alien. Oh, what did you say? You know, and they get all worked up about it. So I want to raise an issue about the word alien. I think this is important. When people use the term alien, number one, we're not talking about little green men from Mars. I mean, we could be. But it's certainly a term that exists in the Bible, and I'm not claiming to be a Bible scholar. I am not even close. But I do know that it does exist in the Bible. It exists in our Constitution, and the word alien exists in our immigration laws. And all that an alien is, the definition, the legal definition of alien, and I swear I will give somebody an award if you could tell me where the insult is, when you consider the legal definition. An alien is simply defined as any person who is not a citizen or national of the United States. I want you guys out there who are listening, and I hope there's a lot of you, I want you to think about this. An alien is defined as simply being any person who is not a citizen or national of the United States. Now, Paula, you could be an alien this evening. And if you wanted to become an alien, it's very simple. You're up in Massachusetts, correct?
Correct.
Okay. How far is the Canadian border for you?
It's probably about 6-7 hour drive.
Okay. Or you can hop on an airplane and land in Montreal. As soon as you cross the Canadian line, guess what you become?
I become an alien because I have to show my passport at the border.
Right. You are now an alien once you're in Canada because you are not a citizen of Canada. Would you feel offended if someone said to you, well, now that you're in Canada, Paula, you are now an alien? Would that bother you?
No, it wouldn't, because that's not the type of individual I am. But people in general, everything has to be politically correct, because
that's
the use of the
word. No, but this isn't about, Paula, this isn't about politically correct. Legally speaking, when any person enters into a country in which they are not citizens, they become aliens. It is a universal term in every country, but apparently the United States today, with the current crop of numbskulls in Washington who allow this, who promote this. There is no insult in saying you are not a citizen. Would you expect to go to England, France, Germany, Spain, Ethiopia, I don't know, rattle off, and expect to walk in and have them say, oh, we're glad you're here, citizen. Would you expect to be a citizen of those countries? Well, of course not. So
no,
if you're not a citizen, then you're an alien. That's all this term means, folks. You see, what the open borders immigration anarchists have done is to create an argument that doesn't exist except in fantasy land. Somehow it's an insult to tell somebody you're not a citizen. Well, if you're not a citizen, you're not a citizen. That's just the way it works. And every other country takes their citizenship seriously. In Mexico, you cannot vote unless you produce an authentic Mexican identity document. And we're not talking about a matricula card either, by the way. That's only the make-believe document they use when they come to America so they can falsify their name and claim they're somebody they aren't. The matricula card, according to a gentleman by the name of Stephen McGraw, when he testified before the Immigration Subcommittee back in 2003, a subcommittee where I've testified on at least a half dozen occasions, Stephen McGraw testified about the national security dangers in the acceptance of matricula cards. And I'll tell you what, Stephen McGraw is someone worth listening to. At the time that he provided his testimony, he was the head of intelligence for the Federal Bureau of Investigation. But believe it or not, the Treasury Department, under pressure from that genius, Greenspan, and a couple of other of these idiots, countermanded the advice of the FBI. I have to tell you, I've been involved with immigration for many years, 40 years to be exact, as of October. I have never before heard of a time when the FBI provided a witness at a congressional hearing who issued a stern warning about a national security issue and then had that warning blithely ignored by another government agency that basically said, the FBI, they don't know what they're talking about. Ignore them and let it be. And that was exactly what happened. And, in fact, Alan Greenspan boasted about how he provided subprime mortgages to illegal aliens who, by the way, in order to get the mortgages and credit cards, which are non-secured loans, guess how they identify themselves? By using, yes, that's right, boys and girls, matricula cards. This is the kind of lunacy that we're confronting. We have lost almost all of our expectations of privacy and freedom in the United States today in the name of national security. But when foreign nationals enter our country and are able to use a document that the head of FBI intelligence has warned a subcommittee hearing is a danger to national security, and yet the warning is ignored, but a 95-year-old woman attempting to get on board an airplane gets strip searched, I have to tell you, there's something wrong with this picture. Now, don't get me wrong. I do a lot of traveling. I do a lot of flying. I do at least a dozen airplane trips a year. And I want those airplanes to go up safely. I want them to land safely. I want to get to my destination safely. I want that for everybody who sets foot in an airplane. So I'm all for security. But the lunacy that we are confronting is that if some person who doesn't have good vision or they're confused or whatever, they open a wrong door at an airport and the alarms go off, they shut down the terminal, they stop all the flights, they rescreen the people, it screws up air travel sometimes across the country, maybe even impacts the world because of the ripple effect of airplanes that are supposed to fly to Europe or Asia or wherever else. But we do that because, my gosh, somebody opened up a door and we don't know who they are. And everybody gets upset. But at the same time, every single day, God only knows how many tens of thousands of aliens, we have no count, no ID on them, no nothing, run our border. And Napolitano says, well, the border is as secure as ever. How secure is secure enough when you see the madness that has befallen Mexico since Felipe Calderon, the current president of Mexico, since he took office just a few years ago? It is now estimated that nearly 40,000 Mexicans have been slaughtered, many of them tortured. Many of them have had their bodies dismembered. They've had the heads of the victims displayed on bridges, headless bodies hanging from bridges. I mean, it's unbelievable. It's the kind of stuff you would expect to be reading about in the Middle East at the hands of Al-Qaeda, but we're talking about the Mexican cartels, especially Los Zetas. And by the way, folks, guess who trained Los Zetas? Guess who equipped them? We did. Because they were going to help us fight the war on drugs. Maybe not so much. So, I keep looking at all the lunacy. I look at the lunacy of Fast and Furious, and I'm sure you've been following Fast and Furious, Paul, or the ATF fiasco where they gave, I think we're up to 2,000 high-powered weapons now to the Mexican drug cartels, this undercover case.
Yes.
Do you know what happened to the three supervisors who were behind this insanity?
No, I don't.
Okay. Do me a favor, because I don't want to hear a thud. Put on your seatbelt. Let me know when your seatbelt is on and the tray table in front of you is in the locked and upright position.
Yeah.
Here's the deal. They were all promoted.
Wow. No kidding.
This is the issue. And here's the deal, folks. Guess where the guns are now showing up, as I had predicted, in the United States. See, that secure border that we supposedly have, they saw the guns go into Mexico and they disappeared. Well, those super secure borders, yes, indeed. I guess the deflector shield is down because those guns are now showing up inside the United States. They somehow made their way back across the Mexican border and back into communities so far it's along the Southwest. But I guarantee you it won't be long before the guns will be showing up in the Northeast, in Chicago, and elsewhere. Of course, there's always the possibility that serial numbers will be expunged from computer databases and we'll have a new version of Don't Ask, Don't Tell. You know, this is the kind of stuff that drives me straight up a wall. The government of any country has as its primary responsibility the responsibility of protecting the safety, the security, the lives, and to an extent the standard of living by making good policy decisions of the citizens of that country. How is our government living up to its obligation as spelled out in the Constitution? How is our government, in common sense terms, looking out for Americans by putting guns on the streets? And by the way, these guys that were promoted were certainly high profile. In fact, one of the ATF agents who was a whistleblower was fired. So the administration has got to be painfully aware of this whole situation now, don't you think? So if they're that aware of this situation and these guys got promoted, I assure you that somebody in the administration at a pretty high level had to be aware of the entire situation. And I want to know how the Democratic Party, you know, I'm a Democrat, I'm a registered Democrat, and by the way, I think that we, you know, should stay within parties. Don't become independent. Vote in the primary. It gives you two opportunities to vote these jerks out of office. But the Democratic Party makes a big deal about gun control. And I have, you know, we can have a whole conversation about gun control. As an agent, I've made many firearm seizures. I took a lot of guns away from some very evil people, murderers, drug traffickers, and that sort of thing, a terrorist suspect as well. So I think it's important to enforce firearms laws. But, boy, the Democratic Party hammers away, we're going to get the guns off the streets. And it was this administration that continued a policy of running Operation Fast and Furious that ultimately put at least 2,000 high-powered weapons, not only on the street, but in the hands of some of the most violent and pernicious criminals this planet has probably ever seen. How is that consistent with what they claim their goal is, to get the guns off the streets to make everybody safe? Am I getting that one wrong, Paula?
No, absolutely not.
I mean, is this bizarre? You know, you can see if these were the guys out there saying, oh, Second Amendment, and believe me, I don't know of any people who advocate for the Second Amendment who say we should be giving guns to the cartels. But the incredible irony is that it was the Democrats that keep talking about, oh, the guns, we've got to get the guns. And meanwhile, they're putting the guns on the street and in the hands of these cold-blooded killers. And these are guns, in some cases, that will be out there long after you know, you and I are dust, unfortunately, because for 100 years or more, some of these guns will still be out there killing people who have yet to be born. That's the lunacy of this, because as long as you have bullets for these weapons and as long as the firing mechanism works, these guns will pose a threat to people everywhere. And the guys behind the lunacy just got promoted. Can someone out there imagine how this could possibly happen in the real world? Not some episode of The Twilight Zone. I'm sure Rod Serling could have come up with a storyline for this. But in the real world, how could anybody explain this one? Because, you know, I have to tell you, I sit here and I'm thinking about this and I try to understand it and I run the scenarios and you try to say, well, what kind of reasoning is involved? And no matter what I come up with, it doesn't work. It's like adding one and one and coming up with 54 and 7/8. It doesn't add up. It's not even close.
No.
And we hear about we need to have jobs, and then you have a president who says, well, and if you're here illegally and you're working illegally, well, that's fine. It is. So what about the Americans who can't support themselves? The Americans who are becoming homeless. And look what happens in your community. If you're out there and there's any recently or not so recently vacated buildings in your community, what does a vacant house do to property value in a community? What happens when you're strolling around your neighborhood and you find homes that have been foreclosed so they are now vacant or sort of vacant? Because like maybe the houses are now being used by drug traffickers or drug addicts or prostitutes. Right? Does that enhance the value of the property of the homes in that community for those people who thankfully, in their case, are still able to make the mortgage payment? Is that an enhancement if you want to sell your house and say, come, let's walk through my neighborhood and we'll take a tour of these beautiful homes that are now vacant with the broken windows and we know people are inside but they're not supposed to be there? Is that where you want to buy a house now?
No, absolutely not.
So just think of all the ripples. And again, I'm not anti-immigrant, folks. I think that America was built by immigrants, is being built by immigrants. But you know what really built America, in my judgment, even more than this broad term immigrants? Because every country can point to people who came there from someplace else. There's very few places on this planet that you can't find that, except maybe the Arctic Circle or Antarctica. You have to, you know, get to the pole. You won't see too many people there. But basically, our country was built by the middle class or people who aspired to become part of the middle class, get a good education, be diligent, be hardworking, and you too could achieve success. They used to have a wonderful expression, if you build a better mousetrap, the world will be the path to your door. Think about that. I'm sure you heard that saying, Paula.
Yeah,
and,
I have.
but you don't hear it anymore.
No.
You know what you hear today? You got to be in it to win it. You have to get a winning lottery ticket or a winning lawsuit. Forget about being creative. Forget about being innovative. Today, the pathway to success is either a winning lottery ticket, which takes dumb luck and no effort and no achievement, or a winning lawsuit, which takes a little bit of achievement, mostly larceny. And, you know, I want you to understand why immigration fraud is so insidious. Have you been following this horrific murder that just took place in Boonton, New Jersey yesterday?
I saw that. I was a little taken aback, and then I saw some comments about it because it looked like the husband had something to do with it, and I haven't looked to see what's been going on with that.
Well, I'll tell you what. I'll tell you and I'll tell our listeners out there. This is amazing. Amazing. They originally described the husband as a PhD student at Harvard. And I said, wow, impressive background, you know. I wonder what happened here. Well, the closer they looked, the worser he got. It now turns out he really was not a student at Harvard. So now you have to wonder if maybe the guy had a student visa. And, I'm only speculating, and I want to make it clear. I'm not making accusations. I don't want to hear from his lawyer saying, oh, my God, what have I just said? But my point is, because that's the world we live in. But the point is, how did we go from he's a PhD student to he's not a PhD student, and now he's been accused of staging the murder. So he took a non-life-threatening injury, but they're now saying that he was the one who arranged for the murder of his wife. Can you imagine that?
Yeah, I mean, that's what I heard, but why do such a thing, you know?
God only knows. But, you know, the whole idea is this business of fraud. You know,
right.
This woman that was claiming that Strauss Kahn, the banker, forced her to have a sex act. Well, the more you looked at the woman that's behind this, the more you scratch your head, because she was accused of claiming political asylum by fraud.
Right.
Right? And then she gets accused of filing tax returns, claiming a child that really wasn't hers so that she would have to pay lower taxes. And then it turns out she's got a boyfriend, according to newspaper reports, who's sitting in jail somewhere in Arizona because he was believed to have been smuggling narcotics into the United States or marijuana. And then there was a statement in another paper that she had $100,000 washed through her bank account, this poor little maid. And today they said she's willing to drop the criminal charge against Strauss Kahn if he'll settle with her on the civil issue. That was the latest development.
Unbelievable.
I'll tell you, it's kind of remarkable, isn't it?
It is, but it's pretty much the way of the world. It's been going on for a lot of years, and it personally, I think it pretty much sucks that everybody jumps on that what's in it for me bandwagon.
Yep.
You know?
If you're right. But, you know, if you look at illegal aliens who come here and defraud the system, you know, I love to tell people that you get one opportunity for a first impression. And for millions of people around the world, the first impression they get of the United States is the face that we present on our border and the way that we enforce and administer the immigration laws, because those are the first laws that an alien is likely to encounter. And when we convince people around the world that in America you can run our border, you can lie on an application for immigration benefits, and the politicians can't wait to confer citizenship upon you, I mean, you really have to wonder how they look at that. You know, come to our country, America, superpower, greatest country on the planet, but if you come here and you run the border and you lie about your identity and you lie about political asylum, it doesn't matter. Come one, come all. We'll make you a citizen. You know, I think it was Groucho Marx who said he wouldn't want to be a member of an organization that would have him as a member. I'm almost starting to feel that way about my citizenship. I'm almost tempted to get a picture of the next mass swearing-in of brand-new citizens and put a single word under the picture as a caption that says, dummies. I mean, why would you want to naturalize when our own leaders in Washington have so devalued the meaning of United States citizenship? And you know, the final thing I want to say to everybody, because we're going to be wrapping up in about 5 minutes, and it certainly has gone quickly, and I appreciate you joining me today, Paula. And I appreciate everyone out there listening, because I'm really a man on a mission, you know. Since 9/11, since I saw up close and in person what happened to our country and to my town. You know, I'm a New Yorker. The ashes landed on me. My neighbors were slaughtered. I have felt compelled to try to get people to understand just how important the immigration laws are. The First Amendment, everybody seems to understand the First Amendment as dealing with this concept. You know, it's this theoretical freedom of speech, freedom of religion, freedom of press. Everybody says that they parrot it. Yes, yes. Oh, First Amendment, I know what that is. There's also two key issues that most people forget. The right to peaceably assemble and the right of redress of grievances. Now, I'll tell you why those are so important. At the time of the founding of this great nation, the only way to have a debate, discourse, argument, disagreement was live and in person. There was no internet, there was no Twitter, there was no Facebook, there was no shortwave radio, there was no long-distance telephone, there was no telephone at all. If you wanted to have an argument, you had to be within the sound of that person's voice. So the only discussions that you could have had to be live and in person. The Founding Fathers said that citizens have the rights, as long as they do so peaceably, and I couldn't agree more, and I underscore peaceably, confront people you disagree with and have it out as civilized adults, okay? I don't want people throwing punches at anyone, threatening anyone, but we need discourse. I was on the debating teams in high school and college. I really think that the debating team should be an absolute requirement for a high school diploma and for a college degree. I think it's really important to learn how to debate. And I think it's important to understand that there are more than one side to an argument, and we need to be respectful of other people and expect them to be respectful of us. But at the end of the day, we've become a nation of wusses. You know, when I was a kid, I was told by my parents, well, you know, you shouldn't discuss religion in public. You shouldn't discuss politics. Religion, I agree with folks. I think that the way a person worships or doesn't worship, that's as personal a relationship as any human being in this life can have. But we need to have a discussion about politics. There is so much misinformation and bald-faced lies being spewed by people with an agenda. We've got to cut through the nonsense. Occasionally when I would do a live appearance, I would say to people, you know, during the Vietnam War, the military used Agent Orange to get rid of the foliage the Viet Cong were hiding behind. Today, Agent Cutler gets rid of the BS the politicians are hiding behind. We need to understand reality, and we need to be careful who we listen to. There's a lot of talking heads out there who think they have the answers, and they run TV shows and radio programs, and some of them are very good. But the problem is, Johnny Cochran was right. Whether you liked him or not, the lawyer from the OJ case, he had a wonderful saying, if you can't trust the messenger, you can't trust the message. Look at who comes up with the arguments, and then ask yourself, is there anything in it for them if they win the argument? If immigration lawyers, for example, talk about, oh, the system is broken, and we've got to have comprehensive reform, we've got to give all these people green cards. Well, there's a lot in it for them, because they would be looking at a limitless supply of new clients. And they're so well cared for by our politicians. Do you know that when they were going to pass comprehensive reform, they tried to pass it the last time, that one of the measures would have cost us, the taxpayers, because the legal fees for the illegal aliens would have been paid for by the federal government. Did you know that, Paula?
No, I did not.
Think about that. Who pays your tax preparer or your accountant when you get your taxes done? I pay for it. I'm sure you pay for it.
Oh, yeah.
If you're here legally and you went through the system, you pay a ton of money for those immigration attorneys. But
correct.
If you were here illegally, you get a free ride yet again.
Yes.
But that's, of course, not an inducement, is it? You know, the law says if you aid, abet, encourage, or induce illegal aliens to enter our country in violation of law or remain in violation of law, you're committing a felony. I think when the politicians talk about the need to confer citizenship upon illegal aliens, they are guilty of violating Title 8 United States Code, Section 1324, that deals with aiding, abetting, inducing, and encouraging. So look at the people that are telling you what they're telling you, folks, and then ask yourself, why are they doing that? You see, immigration is pivotal. The purpose of the laws, the purpose of a nation's borders, is to not permit people in who are going to do harm. And we understand this on a personal level. That's why when you buy a house, you have a front door that generally has a peephole and a doorbell and a lock. The idea is that when a stranger comes calling, they ring the bell or they knock on the door, you look through the peephole and you can make a decision and ask whether or not this is somebody you want to let into your home. If maybe perhaps they look like they might pose a threat to your safety. So then you keep them out. And that's all that the immigration laws are supposed to do. But what we have done now is created this romanticized view that, oh my gosh, these poor people that want to come here. Well, I feel bad for a lot of people who live in poverty. There's over a billion around the world who live in poverty. And I wish there was a magic wand so that we could feed them all and help them be successful. There isn't. And when America keeps getting used as a safety valve for Mexico, which, by the way, is the wealthiest country in Latin America, you have to wonder, is this really the best thing for Mexicans? Because with the resources and the wealth that Mexico has, the average Mexican citizen could certainly be doing a lot better if it wasn't for the wealthy oligarchy that controls the money and the power of Mexico. When the president of Mexico looks at his citizens, he looks at the most valuable export his country has to offer. That is not leadership. That is not looking out for the well-being of his citizens. When our president refuses to accept the fundamental understanding that you need to make certain that illegal aliens are discouraged from entering our country, and you do that by arresting and deporting illegal aliens. You know, final point I want to make about that is this issue of prosecutorial discretion, because, you know, you're going to hear Napolitano talking a lot about it as this debate heats up. Prosecutorial discretion can make sense. A police officer who doesn't stop somebody for going 5 miles an hour over the speed limit on a dry road that's not congested is exercising prosecutorial discretion. He's looking at the way the guy's driving his car, and he says, yep, he's not tailgating, he's not swinging in and out of traffic, he's not driving aggressively, and he's driving at a speed that's consistent with the cars around him. Technically, he's violating the law, but I'm not going to give him a ticket because he's not doing anything dangerous. And if I stop him, I won't be able to go after the people that are speeding or driving recklessly or maybe showing evidence of being drunk behind the wheel. I agree that immigration law needs to be done in a way that makes sense in terms of putting the greatest resources and going after the obvious threats. But we can't overlook the idea of randomness. We can't overlook the idea that massive numbers of illegal aliens create ripple effects throughout our entire economy. This is not the same thing as a guy who's driving 5 miles over the speed limit. Anybody who enters our country by concealing their entry into our country poses a potential threat to national security. And that's what's being left out of the discussion. Because while we use the word illegal, no one stops to realize that the reason for the laws is to keep out the criminals and the terrorists and those who would do harm to us. So So anybody who's going to sneak into the country is potentially somebody who wants to do us grave harm. And there's no way you could look at a person and say, oh, he doesn't look like a threat. I could show you pictures of murderers and terrorists, and if you had a kid sister and she was about to go out on a date with this 23-year-old kid or whatever he is, you'd say, oh, he looks like a nice guy. I hope they have a fun evening. If you enter our country in violation of law, a presumption needs to be made that your presence is a problem, and we need to make certain that we don't create a policy that encourages folks, illegal aliens, to enter our country that way for a host of reasons. This is so wrong-headed, folks, I don't even know where to begin. So what I would love for you to do, if you've enjoyed the program today, I hope you'll be joining me again next week, but I also want you to please go to my website. Make it a habit. Visit my website once a week, and I'll pass it along to other people. If we don't get the word out, our fellow citizens won't understand the issue. I won't tell you I have all the answers, but I've been involved with this immigration issue for 40 years. I've been there. I've had a front row seat to the madness. And what I'm trying to do is to give you the benefit of the insight that I developed the hard way out on the streets. Please, again, visit not only my website, michaelcutler.net, but I would urge you to go to a really wonderful website. They do a great job, and that's Californians for Population Stabilization, capsweb.org. I'm proud to be associated with them. So please visit their website. Visit my website. By the way, Paula, do you have a website you want to put out there, or is this not an appropriate time for you to do that? Because you're certainly welcome to do that if you want.
Oh, no, well, you know, I mean, it's a company website, and it's perfectly all right. I mean, it doesn't have anything to do really with the radio show, but
no, it does, but it does have to do with our wonderful free enterprise system and with green energy, and I'm all for
it. You are correct, yes.
And I'm for weaning America off its oil addiction, because that does create all kinds of national security problems for us. We really should be striving to be energy independent. And I know that you and your husband have a business going, and you know, why not? Look, take it down, folks. You never know. You may find that this is something of interest to you or somebody you know. Why don't you do that, Paula? Go give everybody your website.
The website is www.inventiveenergy.com, and it's inventiveenergy.com.
Excellent. See that? You got yourself a commercial today.
There you go. Thank you very much, sir.
No, I want you to be successful. You know, I'm out here trying to help every American be as successful as possible, folks. We are our brother's keeper. And I'm tired of being told the tough stories about people who are violating our laws. And nobody talks about Americans who did nothing wrong and are finding themselves awash in bills and an inability to support themselves and their families through no wrongdoing of their own. You know, my question is this. When does it become time to root for the home team, meaning our fellow Americans? We should be celebrating every American who legally, through the system, is successful. We should be looking to help each other to be as successful as we can. This business of tearing down the middle class, which is what we've done, you know, folks, we've torn the middle class apart so that corporations could export jobs and bring in cheap labor, because, boy, oh, boy, they're going to maximize profit. God knows that CEO of these companies, they need a new Lockheed Jetstar or maybe a bigger airplane. Who knows? So at the end of the day, if we destroy the middle class, we're destroying America. We're destroying ourselves. You know, I was just in a hotel. When you turn that hotel key back, you're supposed to leave the hotel room no worse than when they gave you the room. Wouldn't it be nice if we could do the same thing with the temporary occupant of 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue and those other knuckleheads in Washington and both houses of Congress, to say to them, leave the building no worse for wear. Leave the country no worse for wear. Because if you don't, we're going to take it out of your hide. Wouldn't that be a nice thing?
It would.
So we should be rallying around each other and supporting each other and buying American products and patronizing our local businesses, provided we know that they're doing their level best to not hire illegal aliens, to play within the system. You know, that's how America was built. We need to make the politicians understand that they are irrelevant. You know, when you work for a company, if you're insubordinate, you get fired. As far as I'm concerned, Mr. Obama and probably 90% of the politicians from both sides of the aisle are insubordinate. They need pink slips. They need pink slips. The day's coming. But we won't know what to do unless we educate ourselves. So please, folks, make it your business to not just listen to the program and say, yeah, Cutler's got some great ideas. Please, let's spread the ideas. Let's have the conversations. Go to other resources. Let's educate ourselves. Knowledge is power. Knowledge is power. And we've got to do the best that we can to be as informed as we can and as involved as we can. It's time to get off of our rear ends and really become involved. The future of our country, the future of our children, the future of our grandchildren all hang in the balance. Paul, I got to tell you, it was wonderful joining you this Friday afternoon.
Same here.
I thank you for being on with me today.
You're welcome.
And I thank all of you out there for joining us for what has been a little bit over an hour. I decided to stretch it a little bit just to make a couple of extra points that I wanted to squeeze into that tight space. And I hope you'll be listening next week once again, folks. Remember, please, democracy is not a spectator sport. I am counting on you to help to form a bucket brigade of truth. Have a great weekend, everybody. Paul, a great weekend to you. See you next week. Bye-bye.
Listening to the American Hour with Commander Tom Garcia on the USA Talk Radio Network.
Thank you again, Paula.